This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code SWORD7.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Podcast episode number 135. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is the sci-fi and fantasy podcast where we talk about the latest releases, discuss what you guys are talking about over on goodreads.com, and of course, chat about our books of the month. And we have a wrap-up episode today and a kickoff episode all rolled into one. It's like a kickoff wrap-up explosion.
It's like a kick in the pants of sci-fi fantasy action.
Yeah, if you want it to be a kick in the pants, I think that's fine. I was thinking more of like a harmonious
pants,
melding.
Put on some pants.
It's like if sci-fi is the milk and fantasy is the chocolate, it's like melding those two together into a delectable sweetness. Yeah.
Spanish hot chocolate.
Ooh. I like where you're going with this, Merritt.
And champ cava and a glass of cava.
Are we both on vacation brain?
I think so, a little bit. Yeah, because we're headed to Nerdtacular in like 2 days, where we will record a Sword and Laser episode. Yay! And then I'm off on vacation for a week.
And I'm just back from vacation from last week.
Right.
Which was amazeballs.
Yeah. I would be jealous if I weren't headed on vacation myself.
So wait, where are you going?
Bora Bora.
Bora Bora. Okay, I was telling everyone Bali, so I'm glad you corrected me.
Same thing.
Same-ish thing.
Mythical island that you only read about in James Michener novel.
All right, so you're going to Bora Bora, and that's tropical. That's in this South Pacific.
It's French Polynesia.
French Polynesia. Okay.
We fly to Tahiti and change planes.
Wow. How long is the flight?
I don't know. It's not that long. 6 hours, I think.
Oh, that's not bad.
7 hours, maybe.
It's really only that long?
Same time zone as Hawaii.
Oh. Okay, so you're going west.
Yes.
Of course you're going west. Why the hell would you go east? That'd be crazy.
No, there's nothing there.
That is crazy. Also, there'd be dragons. It would take you like 26 hours to go that way.
Ben's laughing because he lives east. He's like, there better be something there.
There better be something. Sorry. So this is not the Jet Setter podcast. This is, in fact.
This is the What Are We Drinking podcast.
Yeah, this is the What Are We Drinking podcast. Also not affiliated with science fiction or fantasy. Tom, what are you drinking?
Well, I am clumsy, so I'm drinking a Murphy's.
Why is that? I don't understand why that makes you clumsy.
Because I bought it at the grocery store, and then when I was putting it in the fridge, I dropped one.
Oh, no.
And it, like, the can got all deformed.
Can?
It's Murphy's.
Oh, right, Murphy's.
In the
That's
can
the
with the little
can,
aerator
right?
thingy.
With
yeah.
The, with the B?
Exactly.
Okay.
So I had to drink that because I felt it was not wise to leave it all dented in the fridge like that.
No, that'd be a horrible atrocity against that beer.
It's delicious. A Murphy's Irish Stout.
Nice. I'm jealous. Well, I'm drinking a very delicious Pinot Gris. It is a Murphy. I'm sorry. Now you got me thinking.
It's a Murphy.
It's a Murphy.
What a coincidence.
They have a very rare vintage of Pinot Gris. Gris? Is it Pinot Gris?
I don't know.
I think it's Pinot Gris. Sorry,
sure.
Francophiles.
It's Pinot Gris.
Pinot Gris. Oh, everyone makes fun of the way I talk. It's good. Actually, I just installed a new application for my iPhone called Delectable.
Ooh,
that lets you take pictures of your wine labels so you can store them in your cellar. But instead of having to enter in all the information yourself, it actually uses like recognition of some kind to find the vintner and the year and the kind of wine it is. So it's really automatic and handy.
I bet Arthur C. Clarke predicted that.
Yeah, it's like that beer app. What's that beer app?
Untapped?
Untapped. I think it's kind of like Untapped, but for wine.
Sounds fancier, though.
It is very fancy.
It's very fancy. All right. For those who are like, I came here for the science fiction and fantasy. I want the science fiction and fantasy now.
Let's move on to the quick burns.
Science fiction and fantasy author Richard Matheson is dead. It feels like we've had a lot of obituaries lately. It's very sad. He was 87, and the BBC passed it along. He wrote Hell House, The Shrinking Man, A Stir of Echoes, and I Am Legend.
He was also a TV and cinema writer. He wrote the screenplay for Duel, which was a Spielberg movie, as well as multiple episodes of The Twilight Zone. So sad day, another sad day in the SFF world. It's been a rough month, I feel like.
On the bright side, 2013 Science Fiction Hall of Fame inductees were announced, according to SF Signal. Many of them are alive.
That is true. H.R. Geiger.
Geiger.
Why do I get to have a podcast when I can't even say words? Who let me talk?
It's your life.
Whose fault is this, Tom? Who let me talk on a podcast?
Could be blamed. There's a certain argument to be made. So blame me.
That one talk. David Bowie?
Yeah.
Joanna Russ and J.R.R. Tolkien.
We mentioned Judith Merrill, right?
We did.
I just wanted to make sure she didn't get short shrift.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I was about to say her name, and then you corrected me about Giger.
Yeah.
And
we also have winners. You said it right. 2013 Locus Awards have been announced as well. Science fiction novel Red Shirts, John Scalzi. He's cleaning up with this thing.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Fantasy novel The Apocalypse Codex by Charles Stross. Good choice. Young adult book. Once again, this always makes me snicker a little bit. Railsea by China Mieville. Best first novel, Saladin Ahmed. Ooh. Throne of the Crescent Moon. That's fantastic. Nancy Kress' novella, After the Fall, Before the Fall, During the Fall. All in one novella. She packed it in.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. There's an anthology award. Maybe we'll win that in 2 years.
Maybe we will.
Congratulations putting us up
to Tor on winning Best Publisher as well. And William Gibson won Best Nonfiction. Distrust that particular flavor.
I don't know what that's about.
It's like essays, I think.
Though best known for his fiction, William Gibson is as much in demand for his cutting-edge observations on the world we live in now. Originally printed in publications as varied as Wired, The New York Times, and The Observer, these articles and essays cover 30 years of thoughtful, observant life and are reported in the wry, humane voice that lovers of Gibson have come to crave.
So there you go. See, you're good at reading. You read
sometimes.
That perfect. Everyone's raving about Age of Ice coming out July 23rd. You might be forgiven if you thought that was a historical fiction novel because it takes place in Siberia. The Empress Anna Yanovna has issued her latest eccentric order, construct a palace out of ice blocks, and inside its walls her slaves build a wedding chamber, a canopy bed, and a dais. And then surrounded by servants and animals, Prince Alexander Velitsyn and his twin brother Andre are raised because they're born inside the palace.
Ionanova.
I know what letter it is. It's the one that has like the straight line, the dash, and then the zero. That's what they're doing. Either that or it's the E with the two dots above it. Might be the E with the two dots above it, actually. Ionanova.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the moon Io.
Это хорошо. Молодец.
Stop showing off. Stop that. You're so fancy.
I am hurrying to my bus. That's what I said.
You should be taking the Duolingo. You should be using that app for learning Russian.
I should do that to learn French before I go on my vacation, actually.
Oh, yeah, I've been using it to brush up on my Spanish. Espanol. Yes, it's a cool app and it's free. We also have news about Neil Gaiman's Sandman prequel, which is launching October 30th. which is very exciting. I know a
graphic
lot of you
novel,
out there.
Right? But still, Neil Gaiman. Just got a new Neil Gaiman book last week, people, and now you're going to get more Neil Gaiman.
So much Neil Gaiman. So much Neil Gaiman. Wish we could have him on the show sometime.
We could use a little Neil Gaiman, but there's not that much Neil Gaiman to go around.
He's just one man.
He's not a renewable resource.
Unfortunately, no.
Frack Neil Gaiman.
The Verge is reporting that the first issue of The Sandman Overture will be released on October 30th this year, followed by 5 more issues, each released 2 months apart. Renowned comic book artist J.H. Williams III will draw the 6-part miniseries. He also worked on Alan Moore's Promethea and the Batwoman series, the recent Batwoman series. So very cool stuff. Yeah, I'm looking forward to picking that one up.
Online voting has opened. It opened, actually, according to SF Signal, back on June 20th for the 2013 Hugo Award and John W. Campbell Award. This is part of Lone Star Con 3, the World Science Fiction Convention. So if you are a member, or if you want to become a member by paying the $65 or whatever it is, you can go online and vote for the Hugo Award and the John W. Campbell Award. You have until July 31st at 11:59 p.m. Central. Daylight time to vote.
So how do you get a pin?
You go and you pay for a membership, and then they give you a pin.
And you did that?
I did that.
I have not yet done
that. You can
do
that.
Okay.
You should do that.
I'll do that. How do you do that? Do you watch Arrested Development?
Yes.
So you know when Job, they have the how do you do that? When he does that magic. Never mind. That's all I have to say about that.
All right.
How do you do that?
You know how we're always talking about sci-fi getting the short shrift in the world of movies because it's all superhero movies now. Mm-hmm. Maybe you get your Prometheus every once in a while. But Wired has an article saying that genre fiction, like science fiction, is the future of ebooks. That's the conventional wisdom amongst the publishers.
And why is that exactly?
Certain categories have a much larger digital adoption than others, says Allison Dobson of Random House, VP and Digital Publishing Director. The genres were among the first where readers took to the digital format, and the ratio of readers of digital as opposed to physical are much, much higher. In the case of some genre titles, as much as 60 to 70% of the sales are digital. So you got a sci-fi novel, get it out there in the digital because that's where your audience is. You know, it's funny. We'll get to our pick for this month's book, Ringworld by Larry Niven. One of the complaints is there is no ebook. There's only audiobook and print.
I'm listening to the audiobook right now.
Me too.
I did not even realize there was no ebook version. That is surprising. And another thing they note in the article is that one of the reasons that ebooks do so well is that because you feel less embarrassed about picking up titles that you may normally not want to have on your bookshelf. So that includes even some things like science fiction, fantasy, and romantic fiction.
Romantic fiction, I could totally see that. I don't feel like sci-fi and fantasy is as much of an embarrassment on your bookshelf as it may have been back in Maury's days, perhaps.
I think that perhaps a lot has to do with the fact that a lot of science fiction and fantasy comes as a serial. There's many different, you know, you can buy 3 or 4 of that book.
Mass market paperback, which doesn't look as nice on a shelf.
Right.
As a big old hardback, so,
Also, maybe people who are reading science fiction are more technologically inclined.
I think that's the big one. Yeah, definitely.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. Because you're, especially science fiction, you're into science. You're that's why you like that genre. And so you're into technology. You're more likely to be into technology. I know there's that one of you out there who's like, I'm actually not into technology, Tom. So screw you. but most people would be. And so that makes sense to me.
And SF Signal today, moving on, is also pointing to an article at the Kirkus Reviews site at kirkusreviews.com.
It's John DiNardo's article, and he's the guy who runs SF Signal, so he's pointing to himself, which is fine.
Did he write the article also?
Yeah, he wrote the article.
Oh, he did! Look at that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, John.
He's like, hey, I wrote this article. You might want to check it out.
You're so prolific.
It's pretty amazing.
But the article is about pop culture facts that you probably didn't know were created by science fiction writers. So there is a lot of stuff in here. It's a long article, but it's pretty cool to check out. Actually, it's not that long. I thought it was multiple pages. Now I'm confused.
He's got like 5 or 6 things in here. Mm-hmm. For instance, the best Star Wars film, now most people agree it's Empire Strikes Back. Maybe you don't, but he thinks it is, was written by a science fiction writer, Lee Brackett.
Hmm.
The things in there. Lee Brackett also wrote The Long Tomorrow.
Green Lantern's Oath was written by Alfred Bester. That's another thing.
And Green Lantern's Light! That's all I remember from the trailer.
That's all you remember. I never saw that movie. I never read the comics either.
Anyway, it's a good read. Check it out. We got the SF Signal link, but then you just click that and it takes you to the Kirkus link.
We'd love us some John DiNardo.
We sure do.
We should do Nardo.
I see that.
Sorry, John. That was terrible. Well, let's take a moment to thank one of our sponsors. This podcast is brought to you, of course, by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider with audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this show, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. Now, of course, we are recommending the aforementioned The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman. It's available on Audible, of course, and it is read by Neil Gaiman as well. So that is a very cool one to check out.
That's a treat. I like that. Yeah.
That is a treat indeed.
How would they get that for free, Veronica?
I'm not lying about that. They have to go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That is audiblepodcast.com/sword. And if you would just want to tell Audible that you found them by listening to our show, you can also tweet at them. It is audible_com. Just say, hey, found you guys on swordandlaser.com. It's pretty awesome. Thanks for supporting the show.
Yeah, they've been incredibly supportive of Sword and Laser, so thank you, Audible.
Yes.
Let's take a look at the calendar, shall we?
Calendar?
Yes. Yes.
All right, we will look down to the 23rd. We have decided that before the fact. There's a
podcast. Behind-the-scenes action there, that's fine.
Podcast tonight, tomorrow. You know the date. On July 2nd, we have Neptune's Brood by Charles Stross. Another Charles Stross. Also very prolific. We have On the Razor's Edge, January Dancer by Michael Flynn, The Woken Gods by Gwenda Bond, Storm Surge, Destroyer Men by Taylor Anderson, Beginnings, Worlds of Honor 6 by David Weber, Cold Copper by Devin Monk, Wicked Bronze Ambition, a Garrett P.I. novel by Glenn Cook, White Trash Zombie Apocalypse by Diana Roland. I have read the first White Trash Zombie novel. We read it for Vaginal Fantasy. It was actually my pick, and I'm looking forward to this next one. There's a lot of books coming out July 2nd.
I know. I'm going to keep going.
We got Blood Song, a Raven Shadow novel by Anthony Ryan, Thieves Quarry, Thief Taker Chronicles by D.B. Jackson, Elisha Barber, Book One of The Dark Apostle by E.C. Ambrose, almost lost it there, The Thousand Names, Book One of The Shadow Campaigns by Django Wexler, and The Initiate Brother Duology by Sean Russell.
Ooh, man,
sorry,
it's a big
it's
day
not
today.
Django, it's Django. It had the D is silent.
The D is silent, yeah. I'll take July 3rd. You just rest. Iron Gray Sea, Destroyer Men by Taylor Anderson. Okay. That's it. That's all that's out on July 3rd. July 4th, Anarchy Advent by James Treadwell. I'll take July 9th too. Skinner by Charlie Houston. Best of Connie Willis, award-winning stories by, of course, Connie Willis. Crucible, a Star Wars novel by Troy Denning. Excommunication by the great Peter Kleins. Ooh. The Secret of Abdul El-Yezdi, a Burton and Swinburne adventure by Mark Hodder. And The Executioner's Heart, a Newberian Hobbes investigations novel by George Mann.
On July 15th, we have Celebromancy by Michael R. Underwood. And on July 16th, we have Witch Wraith, The Dark Legacy of Shannara by Terry Brooks. New Earth, Grand Tour of the Universe by Ben Bova.
Yeah. Classic.
I bet Bova's still alive.
He's got a book coming out, even.
Okay. All right. You learn something new every day. Storm Riders by Margaret Weiss and Robert Crames. And This Is How You Die, Stories of the Inscrutable, Infallible, Inescapable Machine of Death.
Yes.
Yes.
Our godfathers in anthologiness, the Machine of Death folks.
Our
amazing.
Friends in anthologies, the Machine of Death folks.
And to finish it up, July 18th, Evening's Empire by Paul McCauley. On July 23rd, The Long War by Terry Pratchett and Stephen Baxter, and War That Came Early, Two Fronts by Harry Turtledove, the master of alternate history.
I cannot believe.
Do you got a lot to choose from? Summer reading time, right? You know, they want to grab those people who are headed out to the beach.
July 2nd. That's today.
That is today.
All of that is today.
All of that is like, okay, all you folks headed out on vacation in July, July 4th reading, here's some books.
I started reading the new Ian Tregellis, the third in the Milkweed saga.
Yeah, I've got that on my audiobook queue. after Good. Ringworld and the Great North Road.
Oh, you're listening to an audiobook. Yeah, I've got it on Kindle. I'm enjoying it very much. I'm also listening to Ringworld, and I'm about to have two more vaginal fantasy books plopped onto my head after tonight. So it's going to be a busy month.
Wow.
We always do two.
Oh, yeah, that first event. She's a monster. She reads like Maury from Among Others. Like, she just reads a book a day.
Yeah, it's not fair. It's not fair. And then on top of my at least five anthology picks that I have to read a day. So it is a lot of reading. A lot of reading going on.
A lot of good reading out there. Leaves you very little time for TV, movies, or video games.
It does, unfortunately. But we have an article on Boing Boing that's pretty interesting. William Shakespeare's Star Wars. An exclusive excerpt.
So there's a book trailer on here for it, but it's a book called William Shakespeare's Star Wars by Ian Desher.
Yes, it is a retelling of the movie, of course, as presented by the Bard, and it's in the line of all those other kind of quirky combinations of classic fiction and the metaphysical. So, you know, it's by Quirk Books,
right? If you just want a sample,
probably why I said quirky.
Here's so like, the opening scroll from Star Wars. It is a period of civil war, word for word. The spaceships of the rebels striking swift from base unseen have gained victory over the cruel galactic empire now adrift. You get the flavor.
So this is the same publisher that did Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters, which I didn't know about. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Which I do know about, and Android Karenina, which I also did not know about.
That is awesome.
But did they do, there was another one too.
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter,
was
right?
Was that Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter?
The same author as Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. I assume it's the same publisher.
I'm wondering, because that's kind of different, because it's not an existing book that's been turned
Yeah, it was. Into. It was an existing bio that
was
they
it?
Took and altered to include vampires, yeah.
I did not know that. He is a fellow alum of Emerson College.
Really?
Yes.
Those Emerson folks, let me tell you.
We're crafty.
They go on to do amazing things.
Absolutely. And the Outlander TV series has been greenlit. Yay, Diana Gabaldon. She wrote a fantastic series, which we also were getting a lot of vaginal fantasy tie-in, because Outlander was a recent vaginal fantasy pick as well. But the series is going to be turned into a television show, which I'm very excited about, on Stars.
But it's going to be on Stars.
Which means
Sorry.
I'm going to be downloading it on the internet.
Yeah, and it's also going to be on Stars.
So what does that mean? I've never seen anything on Stars.
I tried to watch Camelot and I couldn't.
Was it bad?
Torchwood moved to Stars. Wasn't their best season. So
okay.
I'm sure the people at Stars are very good folks, but I'm still waiting. Maybe this will be it. Maybe this will be the one that they hit it out of the park on.
Oh, I wish it was HBO.
Yeah.
Why can't everything just be HBO or Showtime? Dexter's back.
Yeah, I know.
So Showtime.
Steak and eggs.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so we're going to kick off Ringworld first, even though that's backwards chronologically, because we don't want people who haven't read Among Others by Joe Walton to get spoiled. So we're going to kick off Ringworld, then we'll give you plenty of alerts to stop the podcast if you don't want to be spoiled, and then we'll wrap up Among Others. Sound like
okay.
a plan?
That sounds right. very fair.
It was a nail biter of an election. The best since the U.S. election of 2000, in my opinion.
Oh, really?
Were hanging chads. Florida's electoral votes could have gone either way. But in the end, Ringworld just nudged out Red Shirts by John Scalzi. So I made the executive decision, and you were on vacation, so I hope this was okay, to say Ringworld is our pick. It won the vote. But Red Shirts will be an official alternate pick.
Wow, we haven't had an official alt pick in a long time.
Exactly. But people are so excited. And there were so many people who had a fair argument of like, we've read Old Man's War as an official pick. We had Fuzzy Nation as an alternate pick. Do we need more Scalzi? But then there were so many people who were legitimately excited about reading Red Shirts that I was like, maybe this is a way to split the baby. So you can each have a half of the baby.
Wow.
I'm sure okay, the baby won't survive, but I'm not Solomon. All right. What are you going to do? So we're reading Ringworld and I'm very excited about it. It is, the 1970 Hugo Award-winning novel by Larry Niven, set in his known space universe. Although generally what I've heard is you can read this book, and if you're satisfied, you're fine. You don't have to keep reading the series. It's not like there's a cliffhanger at the end. But you may get sucked into the series, so be careful about that.
Okay.
Lots of prequels, lots of sequels. And the whole premise is that they're on an expedition to explore this artifact, which is a ring built in habitable space in orbit around a star. And the people, the environment is on the inside of the ring. So it's essentially Larry Niven came up with this idea because he thought a Dyson sphere would be too unstable. And in fact, a lot of people posit that a Dyson sphere would be very unstable. So he came up with the ring to say, like, well, this will be a better idea than a Dyson sphere. And then, of course, after he wrote the book, a bunch of people pointed out that this actually would end up being unstable as well and would start to plummet towards the star that it orbited.
Oh, no.
So he made that into the plot of a later book, mm-hmm. which I found to be genius.
I'm excited about this. I've started listening to it already, and I already really like the tone and the humor that's built in. I haven't gotten so far as to have actually gotten to the ring world yet. They're still on Earth, technically.
And apparently there's a hilarious error in the original printing. If you happen to get a copy of the original printing of Ringworld, one of the characters is trying to extend his birthday. I don't know if you've gotten to that part
yet.
And he keeps moving with
through
the sun.
Zones, right.
But when he wrote it originally, he had him go in the wrong direction.
Oh, no.
He had him going east. And so,
see, that's the kind of thing that were I to be writing this,
yeah.
I would have spent like days trying to make sure I had right. That's why I get so stuck in my stupid NaNoWriMo.
No editor caught it or whatever. It got printed that way. And then people wrote in and were like, if he goes that direction, he's just going to go into tomorrow really quickly. So they edited it and changed it so he's going the proper direction, that he's going west. But Larry Niven kind of, I guess he chuckles about it now. He's like, if you got a, you know, print of the original, you're going to find that error. There
that's
it is.
Kind of funny, actually. I enjoy that. I like stuff like that. That's pretty fun. Yeah, so I'm excited about this one. I think it'll be a good pick. I think it'll be a lot of fun to read. And we have a lot of resources that we will put on the blog post about this. And there was also a Ringworld miniseries. Is it still in the works?
No, it's optioned. It hasn't been made yet.
Oh,
sci-fi
optioned.
Is apparently in the works. We've talked about it before to get a Ringworld miniseries out there. So keep an eye on that. If you want to read the book, just read the book. That's fine. LarryNiven.net is if you want to go find more about known space. He's got a nice map there. That's the author's official site. There's also a guide to Larry Niven's Ringworld by Kevin Stein, James Klaus, and Todd Hamilton. A lot of people say that it really is only interesting if you're really into the stats of the book. Mm-hmm. It's not like the book is hard to interpret. But Dennis Santoro, Tenori.com, and we'll have that link in the show notes. Josh Lawrence pointed out on Goodreads is a flash animation site with a Google Maps type interface to explore the ring. Careful though, there's spoilers if you explore it before you've read it, but that's an amazing looking site.
I love stuff like that. Like when they take the world and they kind of, you know, expand it even beyond what you could possibly imagine. I think it's fun when a book goes even farther beyond the confines of the page.
Yeah, you can click on the ring and then just kind of travel through it and see the map, and then little info points will come up like, hey, this is, if you want to know about this, this is where such and such happened in the book. That's why you got to be careful for spoilers. But yeah, it's pretty amazing. Good stuff.
Do you want to talk about the alternate pick as well?
Yeah. Okay. So Red Shirts by John Scalzi. And you've already read it, right?
Yeah. So I'm a huge Red Shirts fan. I read this actually last summer on my Hawaiian vacation. So it's kind of come full circle for me. So I'm excited that now I can finally talk about it with the rest of the audience. But Red Shirts, of course, is a play on the classic Star Trek trope that the red-shirted ensign always dies on the away mission. And so without giving too much away, it's kind of about an ensign, his name is Andrew Dahl, who kind of becomes self-aware and realizes that something is not right on the deck of the ship that he's working on. He's working on the Intrepid, which is the flagship of the Universal Union. There's a lot going on with kind of like alternate universes, and there's a lot of insidery Star Trek jokes and just general sci-fi tropes in general get brought up a lot. In a way, it kind of makes me think of something like Ready Player One, for example, where it's very self-aware of itself. That's redundant.
But it's like a Ready Player One for the Star Trek universe.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So as a Trek fan, I found it hilarious and very wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And I would just start laughing out loud while I was reading it. And my husband, Ryan, would be like, "What's so funny?" And I would have to sit there and try to explain the joke, which is always very frustrating. But... It's a great, fast, fun read, and we all love John Scalzi here on the show, so I think it'd be a good alternate pick.
Guy.
It's a great summer read, too.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got that one packed away for my vacation as well, although Yay. I read it right when it came out. I'm going to read it again.
You're going to read it again,
It's been a year. Yeah.
It has been a year for me as well, but
that's a fun read.
I've got too much going on. I don't think I can read it again.
I'm saying I'm going to read it again.
All those vagina pics.
Yeah.
All those
vagina
books.
That's what I'm always saying.
Keeping me from everything else. Those vaginas keeping me so busy.
Yeah. Day and night. Let's thank our sponsor. How appropriate for helping us out. We're very happy to have Squarespace on board as well, folks. If you have not tried out Squarespace, go do so right now. They're a website creation site. And you may say, "Oh, I know about those. There's all kinds of blogging services out there, but they're not like Squarespace." The thing about Squarespace is you're going to get award-winning designs that you can use in your templates. You're not going to have to scrounge around to find one. You're able to pick some colors and redesign things. The website is drag and drop, so you can edit things on the fly and make it look the way you want. 24/7 customer support. Incredible uptime. If you heard the stories about the guys who were walking buckets of fuel up to the top of the building in New York during the hurricane last year to keep their data center online, mm-hmm. that was the data center that powers mm-hmm. Squarespace. So this company is really dedicated to making sure your website looks great, stays online, and they have a responsive design so that it doesn't look weird on a mobile site, or they don't give some crippled version of your site on mobile. It's adaptive. So it looks right on a phone, it looks right on a tablet, it looks right on a laptop. You might as well just go try it out because it's easy. You sign up for a free account, you don't need a credit card, just start building the website. If you decide to purchase the service, which I don't know, you may look at Sword and Laser and say, "That's a nice looking site." Well, that's what we use. We use Squarespace for swordandlaser.com. But sign up for a free account. You don't need a credit card, just start building your website. If you decide to purchase it, use offer code SWORD7. Sword 7, and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Sword is spelled SWORD. S-word 7.
S-word 7.
10% off monthly and annual plans. Don't forget about the free domain registrations for annual plan subscriptions. That's squarespace.com, offer code SWORD7. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. Go do it right now.
Woo. Well, that is, yeah, I'm a big Squarespace fan. I've been using them for a long time. So happy to have two sponsors on the show that I'm really, like, into. It's nice to be able to actually
Stuff
be passionate about the sponsors on the show. We're very fortunate. So now I guess it's time to wrap up Among Others. And if you have not finished the book, and if you plan to at some point, now
go
would be
away.
A good time to go away, go read something else. Go keep reading the book, for
go
example.
Go keep reading Among Others. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a good book.
So nothing else is going to happen at the end of the show other than us just saying goodbye and wrapping up this book. So if you need to go, we understand. We'll see you next time. We love you. Have fun.
We'll even start with something that's just softly spoilery. Eric on Goodreads actually got Among Others through interlibrary loan before he had read the book. And
that is
was
so cool.
Tickled to death when he got to the part where she talks about interlibrary loan.
Interlibrary loan. So he says, "My library doesn't own a copy of Among Others, so I had my coworker who handles interlibrary loans order me a copy. I was utterly shocked to find ILLs were actually a plot point in the story, and it's a little bizarre that I had to even get it through ILL. Our library has a pretty good sized collection for a smallish town, but we were one of the few libraries in the state that didn't have a copy of Among Others. He goes on to say, "It was almost as if someone used magic to keep any of my coworkers from ordering Among Others for the collection, just so when I went to check out a copy, I would have to receive it through ILL and therefore add some extra enjoyment to reading the book. At
was
least, I'm sure that's what Maury would have concluded."
Yep.
That is so cool. Like, I honestly used to live at my library. I did not know that ILLs were a thing.
I used to process interlibrary loan for the University of Illinois Main Library.
Really?
Yeah. When I worked at the library, that was one of the things I did, is I would pull the shelf stuff off the shelves to send it out to interlibrary loan.
It seems like a few other people, Sean, for example, said my local library branch didn't have it, so I had to have them ship one from across town. Does that count? Yes, that is an ILL.
Yeah, totally counts.
That is totally an ILL.
And there's a bunch of people in this thread from the UK saying, yeah, I'd use interlibrary loan, but it costs money. And Maury says in the book, it's free for her because she's under a certain age.
Oh.
But I guess there's a small fee associated with it in the UK.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't think you have to do that here.
Interlibrary loan.
Interlibrary loans.
Listen to the audiobook.
That is pretty cool, Eric. I'm glad you got to read the book, and I'm glad you got to have that extra special little experience by doing something that was so critical to the plot as interlibrary loans.
It was magic.
Mm-hmm. And then Paulo actually had a question that I think we may have touched upon in the last episode, but I'm not sure. He said, "Who died?" And he says, okay, I'm 90% done with the book and not liking it all the way. People on the Thinking About Lemming thread have already gone through the reasons. But one thing got me curious. Who died? Maury mentions that she and her sister were in a car crash. Well, they were hit by a car. Her sister died, and for some time, she used her sister's name. Then she fled home. No one in her present circle of friends and relatives were familiar with the twins. Could it be that Maury was the one who died and her sister replaced her? That is what I assumed in my reading, that Morwenna was the one who died, and what was the other sister's name? I can't remember now. Morgana.
Mm-hmm.
So Maury, the one we know in the story, Maury is Morwenna, and her sister Morgana was the one who was supposed to have died. I think that Maury was actually Morgana. And that she switched names in the book.
I could see that being a story where she so was bereft at the death of her sister, and because they were identical twins, she would take her identity as a way of keeping her alive. On the other hand, I don't think there were twins.
You don't think they were twins?
Nope.
Wait,
I don't think there was a sister.
You don't think there... What? You're mind blown.
I think she invented the sister. Because the car wreck was so traumatic that she felt like part of her died. And then she turned that into a dead sister to be able to deal with the tragedy that happened to her and how much her life changed.
I don't think I agree with you.
Uh-huh.
But I like the idea of where you're going.
And when they want to turn her sister into a fairy, that's the point where she finally like eliminates that idea from her life and accepts herself for who she is and how she wants to live that's her fighting off that suicidal urge that caused her to have to, like, basically she saved her life by saying, no, that was a part of me that died. That was how she dealt with it. And then she finally was able to reintegrate her personality.
Okay. I see where you're going with it. I don't agree with you, but I think it's interesting.
Well, and I think this really is a Lady in the Candle situation, right? I say that I think that, and then part of me is like, no, there was a twin, and she was real, and all the magic is real. You can look at this book, and when I say Lady in the Candle, it's that famous optical illusion. Do you see a lady or do you see a candle? Right.
Right.
Do you see a world where there is magic and fairies and this poor girl who had a car wreck and a witch for a mother is trying to like put her life back together? Or is it a psychologically disturbed daughter who had an abusive mother and was in a car wreck and his life horribly changed because she got a crutch and had to go live with her father, who's created this whole mythology behind her to deal with the tragedy? I think both can be true at the same. It's almost like a quantum superposition.
Well, it is interesting that she never talks with any of her family members about her sister. So that could be a point there.
Right. I mean, is it just because nobody wants to bring it up because that's, you know, it's British society. It's just not polite. You don't talk about it, right? Or is it that there was no sister?
That's I find that fascinating because that never even crossed my mind. I mean, the whole, like, is the magic real thing crossed my mind? Is it Mori or is it Morgana? Is it Morwenna or Morgana in the story? That crossed my mind. So then what would be... So you would have to, at that point, say if there was no twin sister, that there would be no need for her to switch her name. So then that whole argument, that whole discussion is totally moot.
Well, she switched her name from Mora to Mori. I mean, that could be, that's a pretty easy switch, right? Even if there was no sister, be like, I'm Mori now. I used to be called Mora, now I'm called Mori. People are like, all right, Morwenna, you can be Mora or Mori, we don't care. That's fine.
Okay, well, I think that I don't think we have any threads about that, so maybe you should start a thread about it.
I should have. I know. I saved that for the show. Although, actually, Nathan started a thread about magic in the book, and there's a lot of people discussing that side of it. Like, do they think the magic is real or not? And the Karras. You asked me in the last episode, and I hadn't read far enough in the book yet about the Karras, although I knew Vonnegut enough that I kind of knew what you were getting at. Do you think that Sword and Laser didn't exist until one of our audience members performed the magic?
Or one of us.
And created the Karras? We might not have even existed.
Yes.
Did you perform the magic?
Maybe. I was a lonely intern.
I've created a whole thing called podcasting.
I invented podcasting just so I could have a community of people to keep me company on the internets. Nathan is talking about how do you like and take the magic in the book. It's been talked on and off in other posts, but deserves its own discussion. He liked it because it worked in both explicit and implicit or hidden ways. I also, like Nathan, was skeptical at first of the magic, but then the further along the book I got, the more I started to think that perhaps it was real.
Well, the weakness in my argument for it being just her way of dealing is Wim, right? Why would he go along and pretend to see all of the things? He might go along and pretend, sure, I see the fairies because he likes her or whatever. But he actually gets freaked out at certain points. And not freaked out that she's talking about fairies, but he freaked out that he sees something.
But have you ever not convinced someone
of
something?
Exactly. I think that's the one thing that's like, if you really want to go with the it's all in her mind thing, it's just Wim convincing himself that he sees something, even though it's not there.
Right. So I'm not sure how I feel about that. I feel like it could be either. But I feel in my gut that it was real.
I do love the Karras, though. I love that idea of like having that group come together. Their book club seems fantastic. I like that they just pick authors. Mm-hmm. I'd never thought about doing it that way. I've never been in a book club that did it that way, where you're like, no, we're not reading a book. We're just going to talk about Ursula K. Le Guin this week. So hope you read some. Like, that's a really interesting way of doing it.
Yeah, and they do it, but they still pick like one or two specific books. But it is kind of a cool way to kind of get a sense of an author in general. I mean, I guess in a way we kind of do that because we're picking a book and we talk about that author and we talk about the...
No, but that, yeah, I like there's like, it's going to be Larry Niven. Mm-hmm. They would be not Ringworld, it would be Larry Niven. And then, you know, try to read these three books by Larry Niven.
That's a lot of books in a month.
I know.
Trust
See, that's
me.
The problem. We're slow readers, so yeah. And I think the final thread that you got to talk about when you talk about, among others, is the books. Rob started a thread about the bibliography topic and all the books. He wrote it. He called it the books, all those books.
All of the books.
If I had to say what this book was about, I think it would be fair to say it is primarily about a young girl's relationship with science fiction and fantasy, writes Rob. Yeah, there's a boarding school story and a fairy story, some magic, some romance, but the great majority of the book is devoted to this person's relationship with what seems like every genre book of significance published by 1980. And I ended up thinking that's what this book really is about. There's the Lady in the Candle thing, and that's fun to think about. And it's an interesting story, and there's definitely a tragic mainstream novel story about her and her family, whether the magic's real or not. But really, you cannot disagree that the story is about this woman's relationship with science fiction and fantasy literature.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And she loves it. And I think that's what a lot of people in our group, and myself included, related to in a big way, how, you know, we use science fiction fantasy as not only escapism, but a... a frame for our life too, and the things that we believe and the things we want to believe and hope will happen, or, you know, it's like a framework in a lot of ways. So it was fun to kind of see that written out in such a way where you say, yeah, when I was 17, when I was 14, I was totally like that.
Oh, it's just sad. I'm looking at the Listopia of all of the books mentioned, in among others,
two of them, or and whatever
Oh, it depresses me how many I haven't read.
I know.
And that's just through 1980.
I know.
There's just not enough time.
There's so many books.
Ugh.
Well, I mean, a lot of it is series, too, so.
Yeah, okay. That's true.
If that makes you feel any better.
I keep looking like, but I've read that one. Oh, no, it's marked as red. And there's still lots of green.
So much green.
So much death.
Actually, I only have like, maybe 7 or 8 red out of this whole list.
Really? Oh, I didn't count. I have more than that, but I didn't count.
Well, good for you.
I have a lot more than that.
Good for you.
I'm so much more well read than everyone ever.
You're so smart.
And pretty.
You're so smart and pretty.
It's not that much more. It's all, you know, it's funny is it's all in the top, you know, how they're rated by, by people's, most of mine are up in the, like the top 40. It's when you start to scroll down that I'm like, a solid.
You've
green.
Read 40 of them?
No. I said most of my reds are in the top 4.
Okay.
Fine, I'll count.
No, don't count. I don't want to know smart pants. Come on, smarty pants.
4, 5.
All right. Well, I think that's all we have for today's episode. 7, 8. All right, stop. You're making me feel bad. Don't make me feel dumb. I already mispronounced everything in the beginning of the show. It's because I drink too much.
19.
You guys are all enablers. You make me do this show, and then I drink wine.
Wow. Now things. You're projecting.
Am I projecting?
I don't know.
Am I, Tom?
Probably the wrong.
Am I really?
Neuroses. But.
Well, if you want to get in touch with us, of course, you can send us an email at feedback.
Oh, wait. Update what? On the anthology.
What update is the update? The we're still reading them.
Right. But people want to. I know it sounds silly, but people want to know. Like, yes, we are still reading your anthology entries. We hope to have finished our first round read by July 15th.
When did it go from August to July 15th?
August 15th is when we need to make our selections. So July 15th is first round.
There's
and then
literally
we have to go
no
back
way
and
read
the things we've picked out of that first round and say, okay, which ones actually make it into the anthology?
I thought I had until August, so.
You have till July 15th for the first round. And then you have a month to actually whittle down. We have to all read each other's 4 consideration picks. Because we told them August 15th is when we tell them they made it.
All right. I'm going as fast as I can.
I know. Anyway.
No, I have 120 more to read right now.
That's nothing. Just make Felicia read them for you.
Make Felicia read them. Tom's done, by the way. I still have 120 more to read. I don't even
All
know
right.
what Becca's doing with her time.
But she's reading, too.
Is she?
Yeah,
is
I know.
She?
I've been communicating with her.
Have
she's
you?
Re-
have
yeah.
you? Have you really?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
She hasn't sent me my books yet. Send me my book.
Becca, it's not like you have a full-time job or anything. She does.
Yeah.
She does.
I know she does.
All right. If you want to get in touch with us, as I was saying, feedback@swordandlaser.com. The website is swordandlaser.com. All of our discussions happen on Goodreads. And if you want to call and leave us a voicemail, the phone number is 415-7-SWORD-6. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.